From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Doctor Is In podcast. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hey, Joel, let's talk about software-defined radios. I mean, that's the buzz. It's been around, at least in ham radio, for about 16 years. But right now, software-defined radios is what everyone is talking about. And do you want to start with defining what that technology is?
Well, that's a little tricky to do because, as you say, it's been rattling around for some years. And the definition has kind of changed as the technology has changed because in one sense, a software-defined radio is a radio whose properties can be changed by software. And this was actually an FCC idea, I think. I don't know if they started it or picked it up from someplace else, but their idea was that a software-defined radio is one that they could do a type approval of for commercial use. And because the radio could be changed by software into other kinds of things for other services, without changing the hardware, they wouldn't have to do much in terms of recertifying it for a different function, and the manufacturers could develop a radio that they could change by just updating the firmware. Now, that's a different kind of story from what we talk about today. What we talk about today has been moving more, well, we have that part of it as one thing. So radios, I guess one definition would be a radio that could be changed in the way it works by updating its firmware. We've had that for 10 or 15 years.
Oh, if not more.
Yeah. So that's one definition. And that doesn't require any particular hardware configuration because what it says is that some parts of the radio are digitally processed and operated by firmware, and changing the firmware changes exactly what it does. So that can be used to repair problems in operation, can be used to add additional features, additional capabilities, but it doesn't really change necessarily the configuration of radio. Now, we've had something else going on in parallel with that, and that is digital signal processing.
Yes.
DSP, which is slightly different than SDR. The other aspect of what we now call software-defined radios has to do with digital signal processing. And I don't know when that started, but we had audio filters first that were applied at the back of radios that provided very sharp skirted filters using digital filtering. Then those were combined with noise reduction and noise blanking circuitry and notch filtering circuitry, all kinds of things that you could do at the audio level, similar to what you could do if you took the, I don't know if people did this very often, but you could take the audio from a receiver and put it into a computer sound card, let's say.
Yes.
Sample it and process it. Well, people were building that into radios with dedicated processors. So that was a sort of a different thing. It was back-end processing at the audio frequencies. And that was about the frequencies that people could sample using analog to digital converters. Now, as time went on, the speeds at which the A to D converters could operate kept increasing, and the ones that were available to amateurs got up into the tens of kilohertz, and maybe, tens of kilohertz, I would say, and people started saying, oh, well, we could do filtering earlier in the radio now. We could have a radio that, a superhet radio that converted down to a third IF frequency of, let's say, 15 or 50 or some number.
Yes.
Of kilohertz, we can do our processing there. It'll be slightly more effective than doing it at audio. We can have bandwidth filtering. We can do all these other things that we were doing at audio, but we can do them more effectively at IF frequencies. That was very popular for a while, and people were kind of calling those software-defined radios in a way because the characteristics of the filtering could be changed by changing the firmware. And what the trend was that that kind of functionality kept moving further and further towards the antenna. And, of course, the limitation was twofold. One, how fast the A to D converter could sample.
Yes.
But the other was what the dynamic range of the processor was, because if the closer you go to the antenna, the more signals you have to deal with at one time.
Right.
And what we have now is radios that are called direct sampling software-defined radios, in which the A to D processing is happening almost at the antenna itself.
Very close to it, yeah.
With minimal filtering, and that means everything that goes on in the radio happens in that single conversion stage, not conversion stage, that signal processing stage, that it goes directly to digital, and digital processing is used the whole way out until it gets converted back to audio at the output. And that's what today's software-defined radio is kind of like. Now, there are a lot of software-defined radios that are sort of in between those two, and exactly where you draw the line depends on whether you're buying or selling or something. but I think it's appropriate to say that a radio that it is still a superhet but has most of its functionality controllable by firmware, even though it may have a standard front panel, may have one or two conversion steps inside, still can be a software-defined radio because its functionality can be changed by software. The latest generation of software-defined radios are these that have all functionality digital right almost from the antenna.
Yes.
Some of them, there are really two flavors of them. One is the blank front panel type. This was originally started by Flex Radio some years ago, and they've been getting more and more sophisticated in various versions that they've had over the years. And basically all of the controls and operation are performed by a connected computer or connected terminal, let's say, because nowadays the computer function is really within the radio.
Yes.
You can't use a sound card anymore for these kinds of things. All the processing happens in the radio, and you're just talking to it as the connected PC is just the control and display function, basically.
That's right.
And there are a couple of other companies that do those. Apache Labs comes to mind. Similarly, another direction is what ICOM has just done with their IC7300. And in fact, that was reviewed in the current issue of QST.
That's right.
I should say the August.
It was reviewed in the August issue of QST.
In the August issue of QST, for those that want to look at it. And that looks like a regular radio. So what they've done is they've basically built a radio with A to D at the front end, again, direct sampling architecture. But instead of controlling it from a computer, they have the processing built in, so it's all controlled from the front panel and displayed on the front panel. Now, you can plug a computer into it and run it from your computer if you like most transceivers, I'm sure. I haven't actually operated this one yet. But it can be operated by itself without a need for a computer, which is a real plus. Of course, it's a trade-off, because as soon as you build a knob or a control into a radio, you have kind of limited how much change you can make with the firmware.
That is true.
Because you have to build it around the controls that you thought of to put in the first place. And if you need an extra knob, you're out of luck. Whereas if you have one of these that are a plain front panel and everything's done from the computer, you can add knobs and controls as much as you want and just change the picture on the computer display to go along with your new configuration. So there's always a trade-off between flexibility and front panel controls. You know, personally, I enjoy a radio that I operate with my hands on the radio. And there are some people that enjoy a radio that they operate from the computer.
Right.
And, of course, with the ICOM, as long as they don't wish they had another control on it, you can do either, which is fine.
That's right.
In fact, that's why my older radio is an earlier SDR that has a Super Heterodyne configuration within it, very high-performance radio. And I can control it either way, but I always control it from the radio just because that's my... I go back to before computers were particularly popular, even though one of my retirements is from a computer company. But
now, in terms of performance, software-defined radio versus the traditional superhet design, how do they compare?
Well, from everything I've seen, and you can read it yourself in the product reviews, a good, well-designed SDR can be as good as a good, well-designed standard configuration radio. With a couple of caveats, though, actually they operate in slightly different ways because of the nature of the A to D, I think, the analog to digital conversion process. Some of the dynamic range performance that we measure with a standard radio, we can't measure in exactly the same way. If we measured it in the same way on an SDR, it doesn't look quite as good with just like our typical two-tone signals. We put two signals in and look at intermod response and so forth. If you put two tones into a software-defined radio, it does not appear to be quite as good. What you have to do to make it look good is you have to put a whole bunch of signals in.
Yes. Yes.
And kind of fill up the space with signals. And then it looks very good as any other radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us a while to figure that out, and I didn't understand that for a long time. I'm still not sure I quite understand it, but I'm willing to believe that it's true. And I guess it makes sense. I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a situation in which I've had interference problems when there were only two signals on the band. In real life, there are always other signals on the band. And I guess if they weren't, you could have a mm-hmm. separate signal generator you could turn on and stick in extra signals. But so it needs a little bit of care to make sure when you're measuring the performance, you're doing apples to apples.
Yes.
In a way that is meaningful and represents the actual operational environment. And that makes it a little more complicated for our folks in the lab, but I think they're up to it, and I think they've got this things down pretty well. So it's kind of a whole new generation starting up with these, and the IC7300 is probably the first of many software-defined radios with controls on the front panel that we'll see for a while.
Well, I have a feeling you're right, Joel. And, of course, one major advantage of software-defined radios versus traditional architecture is that a software-defined radio can change. You can have a radio, let's say, that operates in single sideband, CW and AM, but then they come along and perhaps a new version of the software adds the ability to receive the digital radio mondial shortwave broadcasts or some other feature. You really can't, at a practical level, do that with a traditional radio.
That's true. There's an awful lot of flexibility in software-defined radios. You know, we're just seeing the beginning of that with the high-speed A to D processing that now enables that to happen in a smaller and smaller box, fewer and fewer stages, and that provides additional benefits as well, in that you have potential for fewer spurious responses that happen in conversions and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Although there are still oscillators in software-defined radios that provide sampling clocks and so forth, so you still can have
yes.
spurious responses from them. Our author of the ARL book, The ABCs of SDR, or ABCs of Software-Defined Radios, was asked that question, and he noted that in his experience with testing a lot of different radios in the lab, he found that the biggest problem with spurious responses was not from the radios themselves, but from the switching power supplies. So that's...
I believe it.
That's
yeah.
moving in the right direction. You're moving it out of the box, and that's maybe
yes.
easier to deal with. But so no technology is without some limitations somewhere, but so far these look pretty exciting.
And the filtering is, at least from my perspective, is amazing. I mean, setting up filters that just have up and down skirts
yeah.
that can reject almost anything.
Yeah. Well, we've had that, and from the very beginning, the analog DSP filtering we had was just like that, and it was
yes.
just amazing, just head and shoulders above anything else that you could do. Now, the problem with the outboard analog stuff was you'd end up generating a lot of garbage possibly before you got there, and you can't get rid of it once it's in the band. But by moving this filtering closer and closer to the front end, you tend to eliminate more and more issues. So having that kind of filtering forward in the radio makes a big difference.
Oh, yes, absolutely. All right, Joel, we have a question from Jim, W3DCT, and he's asking, I understand that a birdie is a phantom, that's internally generated, an internally generated signal that appears in a super heterodyne receiver resulting from the outputs of the oscillators that form part of the receiver circuit. Given that definition, can a direct sampling software-defined radio, or SDR, have birdies? I notice on my new direct sampling SDR transceiver that I hear many apparent birdies across the 10-meter band. Well, what about it?
Well, that's a good question. Not being an expert on SDRs or anything else, really, I asked Martin Ewing, an ARL lab volunteer and author of the ARL book, The ABCs of Software-Defined Radios, for his opinion, and he kindly responded. He said birdies in old times were usually related to oscillators in the receiver, but they could also be images of oscillators or IMD products as well. And software-defined radios, the direct conversion type that we're now seeing, don't have local oscillators used in the same way that they used to be. So that won't be a cause of birdies now, but there are still oscillators in SDRs.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, there's an oscillator reference which may be multiplied up to a VHF frequency to serve as the A to D converter sampling clock. So that's what causes the sampling to happen.
Okay.
And of course, anytime you multiply frequencies, you end up with potential harmonics on multiples that you don't plan on.
Yes.
There are also various clocks having to do with the digital processing in the radio itself. So there are various potential sources of birdies in typical SDRs. Martin goes on that the biggest birdies he sees tend to be from switching power supplies that run the SDR.
Which of course.
Is kind of interesting. Of course, we've had those with all, that goes back to the old analog days.
Yes.
In addition, there can be digital artifacts that come in through the sampling process. You can see images and IMD products appearing there. It's also very possible to overload analog to digital converters. That's one of the limitations on these, and they have to mm-hmm. have high dynamic range to work well. And these can move around with the signal frequency or your receiver tuning, but they will be minimal in a good design, as long as the input signal level is not excessive. On balance, good direct digital conversion SDRs are cleaner than most older radios, but they are not perfect.
Well, excellent. I'm happy that Martin was able to give us that excerpt there. That was good.
He's very knowledgeable.
Certainly improved my understanding. How about one more question, Joel?
Sure, why not?
This one is from Ed, K8SZN, and he asks, I'd like to experiment with simple wire antennas, comparing them by listening while rapidly switching from one to the other. If one antenna receives better than another at a given direction, is it valid to assume that it will transmit better in that direction? This seems logical, but it's an important assumption in drawing conclusions from my test results. Well, yeah, that's a good question.
It is, and it's one of those things that it seems obvious, but it isn't quite as obvious once you look a little more closely at it. The answer is it is, first of all, antennas tend to be reciprocal. They transmit and receive about as well either way, I mean, in the same directions and so mm-hmm. forth, all things being equal. But it depends on what you mean by receive better. Because there are antennas, let's take the beverage, for example, that receives with a very improved signal-to-noise ratio from particular directions and particular low-angle response compared to other antennas, but it has a lot of loss. So
yes.
What you hear is you get a better signal-to-noise ratio, but the signal is actually weaker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you use that as a transmit antenna, you would find it would work very poorly as a transmit antenna. It might be down 20 decibels, which might be what it's down on receive. But the thing is that, so it depends on your receive part of the receive process you're examining when you talk about one antenna receiving better than another. We tend to hear signal-to-noise ratio. When you are limited in some way, you're listening to a weak station, the weakness is indicated by the fact that the noise approaches the level of the signal.
Mm-hmm.
So you switch to, let's say, a beverage antenna, and you'll find the signal is higher than the noise. Now, that's better reception. And because the AVC in our, or AGC in our receivers tends to bring the level up as we have a lossier antenna,
yes.
If we're listening to it, it will sound better. That's why people use them. But if we notice the S meter in the two cases, the noisy antenna that has higher gain, less loss, will have a higher S meter reading.
Mm-hmm.
And the beverage antenna that we actually can hear better will have a much lower S meter reading. In some cases, you even have to add additional amplification. So that's a case where the test only works if you're watching the S meter, not if you're listening. So it depends on how you measure what's better. So if the S meter goes up as you switch to a different antenna, that means the signal you receive is stronger, and all things being equal, the signal you transmit in the direction of that station will also be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily in other directions if you're comparing antennas, because most antennas tend to be directional.
That's right.
But if you're just listening to how well you can copy the signal, how well you can receive the information, which is a signal-to-noise ratio effect, it's not a good test. So hopefully that makes sense.
Yes. Well, thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.